Thank you for downloading this episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. To get more episodes and explore other SDN and network automation resources, visit sdn.ipspace.net.
While the startups are telling you how their solutions will save the world and bring world peace, there are people who actually do useful stuff to get their job done. One of them is David Barroso with his Napalm Library, which is, as we discussed on this podcast many times, an open source abstraction library that allows you to deal with devices from numerous vendors in a consistent way. Now, that library solved a lot of problems, but there was still one problem remaining, namely, you had to configure the boxes using configuration commands that were specific to individual box. Well, David decided to solve that as well, and he found out that maybe the thing called OpenConfig might be useful beyond being used in marketing white papers, and implemented OpenConfig in Napalm. With me to discuss this is obviously David Barroso, and Chris Young from HP has joined us to ask all the management questions that I always forget asking. Welcome, David. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
So, David, Napalm is no longer you and Elisa, right? There's a whole lot of collaborators working on this, if I got it right.
Yeah, there's a bunch of other people, Mircea, Kirk, Eric, those would be kind of like the main maintainers nowadays. And also, there are a lot of other contributors. Actually, I found this page the other day that kind of analyzes like open source projects hosted on several pages. And apparently, we had throughout all the drivers like 60 different committers in the last 12 months. So yeah, it's kind of growing.
And that page estimated that this thing is worth $3 million or something, right?
Oh, yeah, that was crazy. Like the amount of commits and code and everything, they were estimating like the cost of the project, like a lot of money, yeah.
But that's unfortunately monopoly money, right?
Yeah, it is.
The thing that I found interesting is that it looks like with SaltStack, StackStorm, a lot of the other network automation tools are actually leveraging Napalm as their network driver, which is that blows my mind.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think Trigger now has support for Napalm as well. Trigger is kind of cool. It's just that it's kind of like in the shadows. They don't do like really good marketing. They should be out there talking about their tool because they've been actually longer than Ansible and other people. But yeah, there are a couple of automation tools out there using Napalm nowadays.
So how does it feel to be the Lord of the Rings?
Well, it's a lot of pressure, actually.
So the one library to bind them all, right?
Yeah,
in the darkness. It's a lights out data center. Yeah.
Yeah, that mostly means issues every now and then. And, well, issues on GitHub. I mean, like, oh, yeah, Cisco 2960 is not behaving as expected because you have, like, so many flavors of iOS and other vendors, so yeah.
Oh, wait till you start getting issues like Nexus CLI is dropping commands. Can you please send them one per second?
I'll pretend I didn't hear that.
I saw that blog post. I cried a little inside.
Yeah, I did as well.
Part of me died.
Now, the best part was that they actually documented the behavior.
Well, that's actually nice. Like, at least you know.
Well, they documented in the about the CLI section of the documentation. Whoever reads that.
As a comment on our industry, it's kind of sad that we're happy that they documented something that's ridiculous.
Okay.
Just an observation.
Could be worse. They could know and they could just be quiet about it. And then people would just be like confused and checking their code and what the hell is happening here and just like wasting time.
They removed that warning, so we are at that stage now.
I wonder whose fault is.
I don't want to know. Anyway, let's get back on track.
Let me just say, working at a vendor, sometimes it's better off not knowing how the sausage is made, and we'll get back on track.
Okay.
Yeah.
OpenConfig and Napalm. We discussed what OpenConfig is on a number of podcasts, so I guess we don't have to go there. What I'm really wondering is, why did you find it interesting?
So I want to start saying that it's not actually mandatory to use OpenConfig with this new driver, we could call it. It's mostly based on Jang. I'm actually focused on OpenConfig because it seems to be like the direction that the industry is going. But if you have your own models, everything I'm going to say from now on could be applied to them as well. But the main reason why I picked OpenConfig, as I was saying, is because, I mean, I was talking with some users and some vendors, and everybody was saying, like, yeah, we are implementing the OpenConfig models, and the ITF don't seem to have that much traction.
Oh, they'll get there in 3 decades, don't worry.
I mean, well, there are a couple of ITF models that OpenConfig is leveraging on. Like, why rewrite them if ours would be like similar? So they are just augmenting them, because Jang has this concept of just getting something already written by someone else and just adding fields and data on top of it, which is really interesting. Yeah, so OpenConfig is also building on top of the ITF models in some cases.
So if you're saying that you can work with any Jang model, and let's start with a simple case, which is the getters. So you have these functions that are implemented for a zillion of different devices, where you can, for example, get BGP neighbors.
Correct.
And previously you returned that into a data structure which was Napalm specific. Do I understand it correctly that now you return that same information as a data structure that complies with some data model?
Let me try to start explaining a bit how the framework is supposed to work. This new driver called Napalm Jang is supposed to be independent of the rest of the drivers. So you can actually use it standalone with your own code or whatever. You don't really need to be using that alongside like Napalm iOS or Napalm Junos or whatever. So the idea of this framework is that it gives you a way to get a Jang model and just compile it into a Python class. We are shipping with Napalm Jang some OpenConfig models, so you know how to compile them yourself. And for that, we are using Pyangbind. Like, why reinvent the wheel if someone is already doing that? And then the framework itself, it allows you to write rules in a very simple way. It's just like YAML, explaining the framework how to map native configuration or state. And by state, I mean like show interfaces, show IP routes, show whatever, into the Jang model that you compiled, and vice versa. You can also get a Jang model and say, like, this is how it maps to native config. So, and this is what I mean with, you can use it actually with your own models if you want to. Like, I'm focusing on OpenConfig, but if you have your own model, you could still use the framework. You would just have to compile them yourself and then write the YAML files yourself.
So you're not using the functionality that's available with the get functions from other Napalm drivers. You went straight and implemented double quotes screen scraping from show commands into Jang operational state data model.
Yeah, correct. Yeah. So the idea is that you say, like, okay, I want to load this, I don't know, this model could be like the interfaces model, the BGP model, whatever. And then you just have to pass the native data, and then the framework will just like start parsing or loading the data if it's like YAML or JSON or whatever, and mapping those into the Jang model.
But the source data has to be data already. It cannot be show command printout.
Yeah, it can be. It can be. It could either be like the output of show interfaces, which means just like raw text.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be like a JSON or YAML if the device is nice enough to give you that.
So in theory, in 2 years, when this thing is fully implemented, we will not need any other Napalm drivers.
You will need the driver to still deliver the config, because this is only caring about doing the translation bit.
Ah, true. You still need that other driver to work with the config.
Yeah, I did that on purpose because I was thinking that some people may want to use this without actually wanting to use like the rest of the driver. Like, for example, you could use this to build iOS config, but still use like the iOS command on Ansible to deploy that configuration.
So you would use your functionality instead of a Jinja 2 template in Ansible and then generate a file and still use iOS config to deliver that file to the iOS device.
Yeah, that is correct.
And you said that you can effectively parse anything, right? So I could take iOS configuration or Juno's configuration or HP switch configuration, and I would just have to write the screen scraping rules, and I would get OpenConfig BGP data model out of that.
Yeah, that's correct. We don't have that many models implemented yet, meaning that it's early on in the life of this project, so now it's a matter of start writing them. But there are a few examples now where I'm parsing like raw data from show interfaces, for example, so I can get all the like the MTU, the description, the IP addresses on sub interfaces, all that stuff. And that's done for EOS, iOS, and Junos, kind of to prove that you can do it with or without structured data. If you have structured data, it's super, super simple, like matching Junos, Intel, OpenConfig is almost a one-to-one mapping. While if you have like iOS or EOS, you start having just two bright, simple, regular expressions. The idea is that because we are tailoring the framework to configurations, we know more or less how configuration looks, so it's easier to write than TextFSM for people that is familiar with that, because TextFSM is completely generic, like should work with anything. This framework is mostly tailored to how configuration is usually laid out, so it's easier to write than TextFSM, if that makes sense.
Are you able to leverage TextFSM?
I am not, because as I was mentioning, I was trying to build a framework that was easier to write than TextFSM. So there are a few rules. I mean, it kind of looks a bit like Ansible or Salt would look like you have rules there, like parse, like get a block of config, for example, that could be like the interfaces block, right? Because I mean, if you think of iOS configuration, you have like interface X, then you have a bunch of configuration, and then you finish with an exclamation mark, right?
Yep.
So you have like an initial rule saying like, okay, I'm going to create an interface, and so match everything that is between interface X and the exclamation mark. And then the rest is just as simple as saying like description and whatever is next, that's my description. MTU and whatever is next, that's my MTU. So it becomes way easier than TextFSM, I think.
So you're leveraging the fact that in industry standard CLI, which is what everyone uses unless they're competitor to Cisco and Cisco sues them, you are indenting things and you're using exclamation marks to indicate when things end.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it tries to use that idea to make it easier to parse, yes.
I was thinking that through. It's not even an indent, because it's if it starts with interface, and then the next line, look for whatever, tell that block, that one interface would be tell the exclamation mark. And then underneath that, you would, as David said, if I'm thinking about it, you don't even worry about the indent. You just look for a line that has content MTU, and then skip a space, and then grab the content after that till the end of line, the carriage return, and that's your MTU size.
Until you get another object that also has description, and you don't match the header of that object.
You can define the rule yourself. The idea is that you have to tell the framework how to capture the block of the interface or the router BGP or whatever. And you can actually specify that. Like I was just giving the interface example where for iOS, I wrote like everything that is between interfaces and then an exclamation mark that belongs to an interface element.
Which becomes a subset. And then you just run the later rule for interface on that subset of data.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you should only ever have one description. In that use case.
Correct. But I mean, if you have some other rule because you are using some other vendor, you could define that. Like, I don't know, let's say that instead of an exclamation mark, you have like a dollar sign. I don't know. Like, you could still define that. Like, it's actually a regular expression how you define how to capture an entire block.
Yeah, the problem with at least Cisco iOS is that you don't have any explicit exits, and things can skip levels of context. So I already had an interesting case where the whole thing was parsed incorrectly because the same command could work on different contexts.
Yeah. I actually was talking with some other guy about that, and we added a feature for when we were doing the opposite action, translating open config data into the native configuration. So you could give rules as well on where to place the exits to make sure that what you were describing didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Or the other one we've see all the time in operations is you add an SNMP and how do you know which one you need to take out? So instead you end up with a config with 15 SNMP strings in it.
Yeah.
30 syslogs. Yep.
Now, it hasn't been used that much yet because, I actually launched this project out in the wild a week ago. So now it's a matter of start using it, writing profiles and seeing if something is missing, how to make it easier. Just try to build the framework so it gets better and better and easier for people to actually write those rules. So, nothing is on stone yet. It's just a matter of now getting users and see what happens.
That's from what you're saying, though. That's amazing, though, is you have a framework to do this. You have over 60 contributors already involved. And, this is the start of a little idea that is really abstracting with a consistent data model, the network state across multiple vendors. That's
something interesting that you can do as well is because now you're working not with config text, but with actual objects, you can start diffing them. I can say I have this, for example, for something that you would do in Junos is you go into configuration mode and you immediately have a candidate and a running config, right? And then you start typing commands and you can actually do a show compare and see what's actually going to change, right? So with Napalmjang, because now you're actually working with objects, you can actually do the same. You can gather the running config from the device. You gather the running config again from the device. And now you have two copies of the running config. And then you start making changes on only one of them. And then when you're done doing changes to that configuration, you can say can you tell me what the differences are and how to get from this new, how to go from the running config to the candidate config that just built. And you get you have to type interface this, description, blah, default, MTU, no interface loopback because I removed that interface, for example. So you can actually start having similar features as you would have on a full netconf compliant type of device.
That I actually went through your presentation before I did the homework, just for the record. and that was one of the things that I it's amazed me is you've implemented that functionality for devices that don't natively have that functionality.
Yeah, once you start dealing with objects, not with just stupid raw text, that's actually doable. Now I know how to compare data because I have actually data, not just text that I don't really understand.
Stepping a little bit back, you reinvented conv-d, right?
Don't say that. I don't want to get sued. I don't even know what conv-d is.
Okay. On the other hand, now that Chris mentioned that, now we have finally a chance of having a reliable netconf implementation for certain vendors that shall remain unnamed, right?
Yeah, those vendors luckily are starting to shape up. The latest versions of some of them are actually have netconf and even some level of openconfig support. I don't know. I see this more for people that is trying to still manage legacy devices because they cannot upgrade them or something. And also because the openconfig group keeps just releasing new and new models. They do it quite fast while vendors are not as fast as them. So it's also now I have some things on my device that I can configure with openconfig natively, but some others I can't. So this is something where Napalmjang could actually help out. For things that are natively supported, just proxy them. And what is not supported, just do the translation and send native data. So yeah, it's not only for old devices, I would say it's for new as well.
And there's other vendors out there. There are vendors still that have done netconf implementations, but not used Yang, used just a standard XSD, an XML schema definition. So this is also a way to allow Yang to be used to map into that data structure. So if you have those vendors, I can just see a lot of different use cases of, or for a vendor who implemented an early version of a Yang model, which differs from OpenConfig. Again, there's a lot of proxy. My mind is spinning.
It doesn't really matter if the model is coming from an XSD or Yang or whatever. I mean, you can just like translate from one that is like vendor defined to something more standard like ITF or OpenConfig. Like, as long as you know how to do the mapping, it's completely doable.
Yeah, and the other thing that's really amazing from my perspective is that you can actually define a data model for whatever you need, because OpenConfig, it looks like, is mostly what Google needs. I couldn't, for example, get a list of VLANs from anywhere.
Yeah, there is a VLANs model now. I don't know when it was published, but there is one now at least. But yeah, I mean, an example I could give now is that, for example, the interfaces model from OpenConfig doesn't have like the secondary IP address concept. It's just a flat list of IP addresses. And that's not how iOS works, for example. You have to say like, this is my primary IP and these are the secondary IPs. Like if you have like multiple IP address blah without the secondary, you will just keep overwriting the same one over and over. So I just wrote a simple augmentation of the IP address model to have like that secondary flag. So you can actually apply that on iOS now with Napoleon Yang.
So the model, the OpenConfig model has multiple IP addresses per interface, but you don't know which one is primary.
Correct. It doesn't have like the secondary concept. So I just augmented that model to be able to say like, this is my secondary IP. And it only makes sense on iOS. Like on Junos, you wouldn't be using that field, but it's added to the model, so it can be added if necessary.
My head is spinning because I'm already thinking of like how I could use Open Daylight and the Yang interfaces for the southbound layer from Open Daylight to go directly using the Napalm Yang models to translate that into vendors that don't support XSD. Like it's just.
Why would you still use Open Daylight?
Because I could.
Well, some people seem to be using it. And they're super heavy on Yang. Like everything is defined there as a Yang model, as far as I know.
Yeah, Open Daylight, the OpenFlow controller, seems to only use Yang now, from what I'm seeing customers actually doing. And there are still a lot of customers out there that are doing some actually interesting things. Yeah, no, I'm just trying to, like, again, that whole process of the engineering process of cool, new toy. How could I use it? What would I use it for? And what are the drawbacks?
Yeah, I mean, if they're building config and they have their own method of delivering the config to the device, like they could use this to generate that configuration, for example. I don't know exactly what they're doing. I haven't been following the Open Daylight project, but anyway. But these sort of tools is the reason why I decided to kind of decouple this library from the rest, so anybody could leverage it instead of just like the rest of the Napalm drivers.
How are you looking at getting people? Like if someone wants to contribute and get involved, how does that process, what does that look like? And is there a difference between the other Napalm drivers versus the Napalm Yang?
Well, I mean, it's a bit different, mostly because it's a new project. So I'm still trying to see how people want to use this. Like I build like some use cases, as I showed on the presentation that you were mentioning, or the tutorial that I wrote. But the idea is like people should just start using it and give feedback and like, yeah, I want to do this. I want to do that, or see what makes sense or what doesn't make sense. Like the way to go would be just like talk to me on Slack or open an issue on the repo. So we can all be on the loop. So we don't have like several people trying to solve exactly the same problem. But there's some people already like trying to parse like new data and, I don't remember his name. That's one of the problems of using only IRC. You don't know people's name, only handles. But there's this guy that is actually writing, he's trying to parse like the components model because he wanted to know like the inventory of his devices, like how many line cards he has, which interfaces, which optics and fans, power supplies, all that kind of stuff. So there's already people involved. It's just a matter of talking to each other so we know who is doing what to avoid duplicating work.
I was having nightmares of the Entity MIB and the Juniper Chassis MIB. And
the components model is by far the most complex model of all, because it's a bit of kind of like freestyle because there is no way of actually standardizing how to define all the components of a device like optics, power supplies, fans, software, fabrics.
Slots.
Like, yeah, yeah.
So things that don't exist.
Let's move on. By the way, David, now we know how this thing works. How can I use it? What are the interfaces toward the outside world?
So obviously Python, if you want to write your own stuff. I also wrote a couple of Ansible modules so people could actually try without actually writing Python. The modules, let me find them to remember which ones I wrote.
I think it was interfaces and maybe a BGP there in the end of the presentation.
Models, there are a few more compiled already. I was more thinking on the Ansible modules. Like, for example, I wrote an Ansible module which is called Napalm Parse Jang that it can actually just read from the device or from a file, native data, and give you a dictionary that complies to a Jang with a Jang model. So you have like a, I don't know, like a configuration backup. You could read that and get an object, for example, or you could connect to a device and just show interfaces and get the interfaces model. That's the idea. And then get a dictionary that you can modify or whatever. And then there is another model. It's called Napalm Diff Jang that if you have like two different dictionaries that comply to a Jang model, you can diff them. That's the example I was giving before. You can, if you have like a candidate and a running, you can see what the differences are actually. And then another that is called Napalm Translate Jang, which once you have this Jang dictionary, you can actually translate it into native config. And then it's up to you to do with that native config, whatever you want. Like you could use another Napalm model to deploy it into the device or use the iOS command or Junos command or whatever command to deploy it into the device.
So I can already start using this thing straight from Ansible.
Yeah. So yeah. Yeah, I prepared the models because I thought that would be the easiest way of getting people trying it out because some people still are a bit afraid of Python.
Well, at least I'm not afraid of Python. It's just that I'm too lazy to learn yet another programming language if I don't need to.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, after the first 10, I'm sick and tired of 11th one, sorry.
Oh, well.
I actually have the opposite problem. Is I learned Ansible after learning Python, and there's things that would be easier for me to do in Python now than it would be to do in Ansible. So,
well, let's say that Ansible is not Turing complete.
Well, and the nice thing is there's a lot of people out there that are just starting to learn a scripting language like Python or whatever else, and that's kind of a night gig, whereas they can be up and running and providing value back to their business immediately with this using the tooling that they already probably have in their business. And that's cool. That gets you a fast feedback loop to start really helping this particular part of Napalm move forward.
Yeah, that was the idea. Something that people sometimes, well, I don't know. I think some people doesn't know that you can do with Napalm as well. This was actually the Gabriel's hackathon project. It was a really cool one. We call it compliance report, if I recall correctly. But the idea is that you define on a YAML file how your data and state is supposed to look like. And then you can compare that to what a getter from Napalm is giving you. Like you do like get BGP neighbors or get interfaces or whatever. You can compare that output with a YAML file and see if you are complying or not. This works out of the box with OpenConfig models as well. Well, with Jang models, any. So you can actually start like validating like your entire setup looks like what you expect. Like you could say like, okay, verify that all the interfaces are operationally up and the MTU is set to this value and see if something deviates or not. So this is interesting to validate state more than to validate config, because to validate config, you could use in some cases like the onbox, diff or some other mechanism, but also like the state. I think that people sometimes overlook that automation is not only config management, it's as well like validation and other stuff as well.
So I'm just trying to think of through the consequences. So does that mean that I can do the compliance style without having to parse through Jinja templates? I can just go directly using those modules?
Yeah, so you would, for example, write a YAML file saying, like, I want to validate that my, or you could actually, I mean, it's actually a dictionary. You can write it on a YAML file, or you could just generate it on the fly with your own code if you would prefer. But I guess it's easier for most people to just have like this YAML file. But you basically write there what you want. Like, I want this. Like, I want to make sure that all my interfaces are up. For example, that the MTU is like 9,000 or whatever. And then just compare that against the live state of the device and see if something is not as you want. Like the MTU might be misconfigured somewhere, and you would see it on the show interfaces, blah, blah, that the MTU is not correctly set. So you would get it that with the OpenConfig model for interfaces.
And you could do this with zero programming effectively, right?
Yeah. That would work. Today out of the box, you would just have to write the YAML file saying that that's actually what you want to check, and then use the, for example, the napalm parse. Forgot the name of the model. I have a very bad short-term memory. So the napalm Jang parse to get like the state of from the device, and then the napalm compliance report model to actually compare that data that you got with the YAML file that you wrote and see if something deviates or not.
That's really cool for my, like, having gone through some gathering state, running it through a YAML file, which does have, it's in some senses, it's programming still, because you've got control logic, you've got loops within your YAML file, or with your Jinja template, sorry.
No, you don't need that.
That's traditional. Like, I've had to do that
before. Okay, yeah.
But this allows me to, if I'm someone who has no coding, no computational thinking, and I just want a diff, I don't even have to think about those control structures within my Jinja templates. I just go straight, like, that's cool. That removes another barrier or a perceived barrier to being able to get up to speed and be effective quickly. That's cool.
It's almost like prolog programming. You just specify the rules and off it goes. And you never know how it got the results.
Yeah, I mean, for people that never heard of this feature before, this might sound a bit like, I don't know, complex or weird. I just want to emphasize that there is a tutorial that I wrote there where everything that we are talking about now, it's kind of like explained. You can see it. It's actually written on a Jupyter notebook, which means that you can actually click play, and you see how the code keeps executing itself alongside the explanation. So just for people that are now being confused and not really following what I'm talking about.
You're spoiling us.
I'll second Jupyter. Jupyter is awesome as a notebook to explain coding to non-coders.
Yeah, it is. It is. The only thing that you need is that the notebook expects you to have a couple of VMs up and running because it's connecting to devices and doing things live. But the instructions to get the VMs should be there. And if they're not, just ping me and I will fix it.
Okay, so where can I get all these goodies?
To install it is just as simple as any other tool, like, well, any other Python tool, like just pip install napalm Jang. And if you're just installing napalm from the main napalm project instead of just individual drivers, you should get it already because it's part of the main project now. Like pip install napalm should give you that one as well. So the method would just depend on if you want only napalm Jang or everything. And yeah, that's pretty much it. You can find also on the Napalm Ansible repo the models for Ansible that I just mentioned before.
And they are just things I have to pull down and put in the proper directories, and they work with Ansible.
Yeah, great. You just have to download them and put them into your library folder, and they should work already.
And when it all breaks, how do I get in touch with you?
Well, the main entry point would be like just opening an issue on GitHub. We are also very active on Network to Code Slack. There's a Napalm channel there, which there's a lot of people there that knows more or less how things work. So anyone can give you a hand if I'm not available.
And then I think the other thing, just thinking this through, if I was in an operations environment, this is probably not something that you would want to really standardize your entire organization on right now. I'm assuming it's going to change fairly quickly, hopefully.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, thank you for raising that point. Like now we could say right now it's in a beta stage, the version now is like 0.06, I think, and I will keep it under 0.0 until I feel that the API is stable, because as I was mentioning before, I want people now to start using this to see how they are using it, to see if something has to be changed, if it makes sense to remove something or add something else. So don't rely on it like for something critical until you see that it goes from 0.0 something to 0.1 at least.
So for the moment, play with it, but don't run it in production, or at least don't complain when it crashes in production.
Well, I mean, use it in production, but not for something like super critical. Like, I don't know, like, I mean, getting data, like getting operational data and comparing it against something that you want, for example, the compliance report thing that I was mentioning, that's completely fine because you're not going to break anything if you're just reading data. But I mean, if you're building like this super awesome tool that is going to manage your entire network, yeah, you might want to be more careful with that, or just pin the Napanjang version. Like if you pin it on the requirements file of your project, that should be fine, because then you will know for sure that you're using that exact version that is never going to change because it's a static version. That sometimes people overlook that feature of Python.
What's really interesting to me about projects in where this is right now, and again, Napalm is not new, but this particular sub-project within Napalm is, yeah, you just have to do a risk assessment. And like you said, figure out, am I grabbing data just from some, grabbing operational data to check state compliance from my edge switches? Sure, no problem. Maybe don't upgrade your core routers with this. You know, there's a lot more risk with that. But the advantage of getting in early and starting to work with this a little more in production is that you actually have the ability to influence the future of the project and to influence and get what you need as a network operator delivered by the project. You know, maybe even contribute some code yourself. Right. So that's kind of the double-edged sword of this. But this is like when 20, 25 plus years I've been around, I've never had the ability to influence what's going to actually go into code that's managing my network. Like it's just an amazing time for us in this industry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean, if people doesn't use it, like this is not going to grow. And then, I mean, it's the whole industry who is losing, I think, because we would just be using Notepad for operations at scale still.
Come on, Excel.
Yeah, concat this field and these other fields.
Okay, you guys are digressing. Let's wrap it up right here. David, if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that apart from the Network to Code Slack channel that you already mentioned? Also, where could they find the tutorials, presentations, yada, yada, for Napalm?
I will just give you the info so you can add it to the blog.
I will. And Chris, where can people find you?
At Netman Chris on Twitter is probably the easiest place that I lurk and snark these days. And you know, GitHub with same username and yeah, around.
You still blog?
I still do at controlissues.net. That is, I've been actually doing a lot more home automation and combining networking operations and light bulbs and all sorts of interesting stuff. So.
And by the way, I can't tell you how many times I've used that term I got on your blog. The meantime to innocence.
meantime to innocence and yeah, the acceptable unit of loss.
Exactly.
Is those two that I'm just, yeah. Meantime to innocence. And eventually we'll get there.
Yeah. And every networking engineer totally loves that concept when I explain it.
Yep. It's always our fault.
Yes. So thank you both. And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, the podcast on everything software defined. I'm Ivan Pipelniak. And if you want to follow my ramblings, go to ipspace.net and explore.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Software Gone Wild. If you want to learn more about software-defined networking, network automation, and related topics, visit sdn.ipspace.net and explore our courses, books, webinars, and podcasts.
They have been looking to implement Yang models, but OpenConfig and IETF aren't moving fast enough. So how do we translate between Yang to XSD? And I'm like, okay, for it's a data model. Like I'm kind of missing your question here. You know, it's XML.
Yeah, so hey.
Oh yeah, that people, I mean, they get that so much wrong. Like, you're not going to use Yang to deploy anything.
Exactly.
Yang is just like, it's just documentation.
Yeah, and every time I write this, there is someone who's so upset that I don't get it.
Yeah, so I know.
And then they send me some article from some ridiculous website that is just regurgitating the press releases that claims that someone is using Yang to do something. And I'm like, dude, you have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I gave up with that fight, like, whatever.
I did a blog post that I just basically took YAML, XML, and JSON, and just used XML to dict, and used the YAML library, and used the JSON library, and just took a blob, and then just translated back and forth between them, and went, there's, can we stop arguing about it's an XML? Someone internally made, ooh, it's an XML API. Ooh.
Oh, well, I got one that was even worse, where this guy, I don't remember who it was, but that was like, no, you have to use Ying. Like, Ying, it's just XML. It's not just XML, it's Ying. Like, what? Like, Ying is just how they called XML within the Yang RFC, but still just XML. Ah, that guy was so annoying.
It's called marketing.
I don't understand why they called it Ying, because it's just XML, but people kind of like, I don't know. It was just like,
because, well, it's the complementary part to Yang, right?
It's XML, come on.